Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Thank you, Dennis Dodd. CBS Sports coming on, talking the latest from college football with playoff expansion. And it appears that 12 is the path that the game is going to go. There is a recommendation. They'll talk about it in Chicago next week. There'll be some sort of vote. And then my guess is the way it looks now that the 21 season, 22 season will be played under the current provisions. And then there's no reason to put it off another 3 years. I believe, beginning with the 2023 season, that it will be a wide-open college football playoff field. Again, Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, appreciate him coming on and talking about that. If you missed it, and if for any other reason, you should probably get the app or subscribe to the podcast. That's easy, easy, easy. Go to thepodcastpark.com. You'll see it, Chuck Oliver Show. You click it, subscribe. Your schedule at that point. Your schedule, whenever you want, however often you want, you get the podcast, you subscribe, it's going to show up every single day. About 10 minutes from now, Roddy Jones, good friend of ours from the ACC Network, he will be here. And bottom of the hour, a guy I always like catching up with, he's got some opinions, ain't no doubt about that. Here to talk Ole Miss, it'll be Neil McCready. Right now, let me get you up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football, every single day. This is CFB 365, presented by Ecoderm. Text Ecoderm to 31996 now for your free sample of Ecoderm Pain Relief Cream and CBD from Frank Thomas. Text ECODERM to 31996 now.
Well, it's college football in 2021, so that means we got comings and goings in the transfer portal. The first category, Rontavious Groves, wide receiver, North Carolina, is now Rontavious Groves, wide receiver, Texas State, 5'11", 180. Been at UNC for 4 years. He has up to 2 years of eligibility left. And he's played, and this is a big deal for Texas State. This is how it really works for the group of five. Most often it's a case like what we saw with Marshall. It was Kane Madden, who's a center or a guard. Interior offensive line is how he's listed. He's a center, but he play guard. So he was an All-American at Marshall, and he's like, I got one season left. I want to really up my game. I'm going to transfer. Ooh, Notre Dame. From Marshall to Notre Dame. So I want one season and I want to show the NFL and we'll go get paid. Well, it goes the other way. I've been at that level and I played some and I've shown my wares. I'm going to use that to springboard into a bigger role on a smaller stage. So this kid's caught 40 passes already. 463 yards, pair of touchdowns. He's good. He'll be really good at Texas State, going the other way, and I don't know how this goes, but going the other way potentially. Headline, Texas A&M senior cornerback enters portal. That would be senior cornerback Elijah Blades. Stud JUCO from two classes back. Number 4 overall JUCO recruit any position that year. Stepped in, started contributing, opted out of last season, and has one more year of eligibility. So he's going JUCO, Texas A&M. For whatever it matters, this is sort of John Gruden-ish. Hey, Tennessee has an opening. You know John Gruden. You always have to mention it. Any sliver of connection. If you care, 2 years ago when he was leaving JUCO, Oregon, Alabama, Florida, Colorado, and Arkansas were some of the other top schools on his list. Let's see. Oregon, Alabama, Florida. A couple of them have different coaches now, so who knows? But maybe he's looking to go down a level, or maybe he's always wanted to play, I don't know, in South Florida. He's going to go play for Manny Diaz. But he is in the portal. He's a senior, and he's good. He's big, too, like 6'2". So, all right, wraps up the headline segment. I'm going to take a break. Come back with more next.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. College football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Well, by association, I'm going to assume our next guest is having a good day because folks in the ACC look around, expanded playoffs, and they have always been that team that wanted to get two teams in. And now you look at not only the increased fortunes of some ACC teams, but the fact that you don't have to be one of the top four. The ACC, I think, is as they're as primed as anybody to take advantage of a 12-team field, if that is how it comes to pass. I want to welcome on right now. I'm going to call him a good friend of ours from the ACC Network. It is former Georgia Tech running back Roddy Jones. Roddy, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Chuck. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, give me your how this affects the ACC boil-down thoughts as you started getting the information like everybody else that all we're missing now really is a vote and an announcement. But if it is a 12-team field, what is the benefit? What is the effect on the Atlantic Coast Conference?
I think it gives you an opportunity to have somebody get the national attention that Clemson gets seemingly every year by being in the playoff. I mean, I think that it certainly opens the door for a school like North Carolina or Miami to get in and get that national publicity to be seen on the biggest stage. It helps the ascent of Florida State if they're able to get back and get close and then be seen on that stage, then are they, from a recruiting standpoint, considered a desirable destination as well? So I think it helps all the way around. I think there's a lot of winners in this. The ACC is certainly one. I don't think they're the biggest winner, but I think the ACC is certainly one of the winners.
Came with Roddy Jones from the ACC Network. Do you have any sort of inkling, any sort of whisper in the back of your gray matter that we're not going to get the 12 teams? I mean, because I have started to proceed as if this is the announcement coming.
No, I have no doubt that we're going to get to 12. This announcement wouldn't have been made. These people are smart. This announcement wouldn't have been made from the working group if they were to go to the management group, the 10 conference representatives and Notre Dame, Jack Swarbrick, Notre Dame's AD, if they felt like this was going to get shot down. You can't go from a more expansive playoff and then all of a sudden say, hey, we're going to go back to making it more exclusive. Like, it just doesn't work like that. From a publicity standpoint, it'd be a nightmare. So I have no doubt that it's going to end up at 12. We could see some tweaks on the margins, like the bowl games being the quarterfinals, the top four seeds not getting a home game. Like, that's some of the tweaks that we could see in this thing. But I think 12 teams is what we're going to end up with.
Yeah, and for everybody who's listening, what Roddy was saying there is correct. It's the four who have already been kind of bouncing it around, and then there's seven other people. And so that's Chicago and next week. Roddy, let's jump onto the field because that's always more interesting to me at least. And let's talk about your alma mater. And I'm going to start with some of the teams, maybe with more questions in the ACC. And I'm going to say this about Jeff Collins. Good coach, really good recruiter. The kids will bleed for him. You got to win games. At some point, you got to start winning games. And I know what 2020 was. We all do. 2021 is that season for Jeff Collins, isn't it?
It's a tough question to answer because, yeah, I want it to be, but I also want to set expectations for Tech fans, especially because the league is better this year. You've got 13 of the 14 teams have a quarterback returning with starting experience. You've got some really good defenses across the league. And this is a school in Georgia Tech that's got Clemson, Notre Dame, Georgia all on the schedule. You get Boston College from the Atlantic, and I think Boston College is going to be a really good team. Then you look at the Coastal, and there's no layups there. Like, Duke would be considered the biggest layup, and they may have the second best back in the league when this is all said and done. So I think when you look up and down the league, there's a lot of toss-ups on Georgia Tech's schedule. And when you look at those toss-ups, games against teams like Virginia Tech, Virginia, who a lot of people aren't talking about, but's going to be very old and experienced with the number of super seniors that they got back. Pitt's got Kenny Pickett coming back in a loaded offense. I think that's a top three offense in the league next year. Then you go down to Miami, and obviously we know about what they're doing. They're retooling on defense, but Manny Diaz taking over the play calling down there. And then obviously North Carolina. So like when you look at those schools in the Coastal, where are the wins? And so I think if Georgia Tech, they've got a brutal November, if you can go into November with five wins and you're fighting four or five wins and you're fighting for a bowl berth down the stretch, I think it's a good year. But the back part of that schedule, particularly last month, is really, really tough. So I think if Jeff Collins is scratching the surface or knocking at the door of a bowl game, it's a good year. But I'll be honest with you, Chuck. Like, I don't see them making a bowl game next year.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, no doubt about it. Continuing again, Roddy Jones, ACC Network. Kenny Pickett, I believe, is going to be a fifth-year starter for the most part, fifth-year starter. And I don't say this to be critical. I think it's an observation. You're just supposed to be more advanced in two specific areas the more you play at quarterback: completion percentage and touchdown to interception ratio. I will give him credit. He doesn't turn the ball over necessarily a lot, but as a fifth-year starter, I got to have some expectations that you can flip the field, that you can be a game wrecker a little bit, and he looks like a guy whose biggest strengths are he's played a lot. That's it.
Yeah, well, I think that is both fair and unfair because he's a guy that was playing at a really high level for the first probably four or five games last year and then had a pretty serious ankle injury against Boston College and almost willed them to victory on a bum ankle there. They lost that game because they couldn't make a field goal. I mean, chip shot field goals. Then they miss an extra point in overtime, and that's how the game ends. So I think Kenny Pickett was playing really well until that point. Then he missed a couple games, and then he was playing on a bum ankle, obviously, towards the end of the year in a really gutty performance. The touchdown-interception ratio thing, that's a fair criticism because this is a Pitt team that as a whole has really struggled in the red zone. As you said, he doesn't turn the ball over much, but he doesn't throw touchdown passes either. All of that to be better. They're going to be better around him. They'll probably have the best back that they've had in a while there. They've definitely got the best receiver room. Jordan Addison's back. Tasier Max playing really well. They've got a kid named Lucas Kroll who from the tight end transfer for Florida, who they thought was going to be all world last year. Yeah. He came in banged up. He has a knee injury early on. He's out for the rest of the year. Like Adonis when we saw him in the spring. So all the criticisms of Kenny Pickett are fair, but I think if you're looking for upside, Kenny Pickett's probably one of those guys that, if you're thinking of guys sneaking into the back of the first round, maybe second round picks next year at quarterback, Kenny Pickett's a pretty good bet to get up there because I think he's got the intelligence, the arm strength. He's extremely mobile when he's healthy. So there's a lot of people that like Kenny Pickett. I mean, he had an invite to the Super Bowl, to the Senior Bowl waiting for him. So there's certainly NFL scouts that really like his skill set.
I want to wrap it up asking you about two programs that in the ACC, certainly, it is swimming upstream. And I'm going to start with David Cutcliffe and Duke. I think that this is not an opinion. I think it's a fact. He's done as good a job as it's possible to do at Duke. That's been Duke football's 100% is what David Cutcliffe has done. I think going into the 21 season, I mean, I look at that team and what's coming back, and I'm like, this could be the toughest season he's had in Durham.
I think the last 2 years were tougher for him because of the turnovers. So like it was just so frustrating for them from a turnover perspective because they were in the game. They were in games consistently, and the turnovers killed them. The quarterback play has been abysmal. While they don't have a lot of proven stuff on defense, they cannot play worse against the run. And so I think they'll be better there. They'll be more stout up front. And then in the secondary last year, they had injuries to both of their starting corners, so maybe they avoid that. I think they'll get better quarterback play. Duke's kind of in the same, like I talk about Georgia Tech. I think they will be better next year. They will certainly turn the ball over less. I hope. I said that 2 years ago, too, but then they didn't. Last year, they were just as bad. So I hope they turn the ball over less, but the rest of the league is better. So where are the wins? I mean, they get Northwestern at home in the non-conference, which, like, that's a, it's going to be a really tough game. I think the past 2 years were probably the toughest. But Duke's rebound may not be as extreme as David Cutcliffe may have hoped. And I think the biggest compliment to David Cutcliffe, bowl game, a disappointing season. When I was getting recruited, like, Duke making a bowl game wasn't even possible. Like, that wasn't even the thing that we considered. So he has done an excellent job there. And I think they will be better. I don't know how much better in terms of wins and losses because the league is better. So they're going to have to win some that people don't think they will.
Last thing I want to ask you about, I was looking at Dino and Syracuse, and I'm a big fan of his. It's just – that's fun football. But I started thinking last night, I'm looking around the ACC, and, Roddy, you know, it's like almost everybody used to be married to an offense. You had an identity based on a particular offense. I think now, like 80 to 85%, you just run a deeper or shorter version of the same thing. That's not true at Syracuse. They are still one of those teams that has an identity based around play calling and scheme and formation and all that. And it's hard to recruit those kids from New York State. You're running that system maybe in Florida or Texas or, you know, somewhere in the South. This is just a tough go for Dino right now.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing for Dino the past couple seasons is they've been terrible on the offensive line. And some of that has to do with injury, some of it medical. The beginning part of last season, which was absolutely crazy. So I think when you consider what Dino Babers has done there, he took him to a high watermark, 10 wins a few years ago. Mm-hmm. That was certainly excellent. But like the Tommy DeVito era has not gone anywhere near what they thought it would. Garrett Schrader came in there to provide them some quarterback competition. But offensively, they've got a really good running back in Sean Tucker. But offensively, they have been so bad the past couple seasons because of that offensive line that they have a steep hill to climb. Like, I look at Syracuse and I see more hope with Duke than I do with Syracuse because Syracuse has been bad in some places where I'm not sure they're much better. I know Duke's better on the offensive line. They've got NFL talent on that offensive line now that's been kind of waiting and developing the past couple seasons. I don't know that for Syracuse. And the defensive linemen that they lost, the secondary that they lost, I thought Tony White did an excellent job with that defense last year, but I don't know how that defense is as good as they were last year. So, we will see. It's been a tough go, as you said, though, for Dino Babers the past couple seasons.
Yeah, you get that dynamic quarterback guy like Dungy, and suddenly things are, you know, everything's a lot easier. Roddy, I appreciate your time, man. Thank you for coming on today.
Of course, Jack. Always a pleasure.
All right, Roddy Jones, ACC Network. And that's one of the – it used to be that you would look around college football, and it might be the wishbone, it might be the wing tee, it could be shotgun, air raid, whatever. It's like when Hal Mumme was at Kentucky, that wasn't just another offense. It was like Mike Leach, okay, who was actually on the staff for Hal Mumme at Kentucky. That's what I'm talking about. Like Mike Leach, you look at – that's not a team just passes the ball. They're married to that identity, and it's a different offense. But it's like Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech or Troy Calhoun, Air Force, Dino Babers at Syracuse. Giddy up, man. Giddy up. Gus Malzahn has sworn that that's what he's bringing. I got to get back to being myself. He said that on these airways. I got to get back to being myself. Pace and hurry up and get to the line. You can, and I know you got to have the trigger, man, and Lord knows Gus knows that. Dino hadn't had it. And so you had was the system working in the ACC? Or did you have a dynamic quarterback and some pops on defense and you look around the rest of the Atlantic Division and outside of Clemson, maybe everybody else was down? I'm not going to explain away or excuse away a 10-win season, but, man, it looks more and more like an outlier. I mean, every single day you look back at that Syracuse program, and it is just, like I said, a tough go right now to recruit the kind of athletes you need for that offense, that giddy-up in New York State.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through a Friday on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states, 51 sticks. Appreciate y'all making that possible. We talk college football here. Got a little housekeeping to do. This was from Jacquez Jones, the story from, I guess, Wednesday or maybe it was yesterday. And I just texted a buddy over there, asked him about Jacquez Jones. He's a starting linebacker who led an SEC team in tackles. And you talk about a strange headline. He transferred to another SEC school, and he'll be on the field in 2.5 months or 3 months playing. That's just what it is now. The NCAA said, yeah, go ahead. And the SEC's, oh, yeah, us too. So Jacquez Jones, former starter at Ole Miss, is now on the way to Kentucky. So I texted somebody. I was like, hey, what happened? Says, some folks think his PT was going down this year, and he's smart enough to realize that. New text, great kid, though. I want to welcome on someone who will give us a lot more than just a text message about it, and we're going to talk Lane Kiffin and offense and all of that from RebelGrove.com. It is Neil McCready. Neil, how are you today?
Chuck, I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. Take me through the Jacquez Jones thing. I guess you could listen there. You could hear that good kid, good player, just thought he was going to lose some playing time, and that is not any way to vault yourself into the NFL Combine is by reduced playing time your final year. What's the reel there with Jacquez Jones?
Yeah, I think it's pretty close. I mean, look, they brought Chance Campbell in out of the transfer portal, who started the last couple of years at Maryland, will almost certainly start at Ole Miss. Momo Sanogo had a pretty good spring. I think they feel pretty good about him. And then they have two, three young guys that had really good springs, have stepped up, are going to play bigger roles. And Jacquez Jones was going to play. There's no question about that. He was going to be in the rotation. He was certainly going to have a role, but I don't know that his role was going to be, assuming everybody stayed, you know, quasi-healthy, I don't know that his role was going to be what it was a year ago. He used to play at Ole Miss for linebacker coach John Summerall, who's now at Kentucky, and so it makes some sense that he could fit a role there. I think he'll have more playing time there. And when the SEC passed the intra-conference transfer rule that you just referenced that allows him to play right away, it makes sense. Look, you know, we're going to see a lot of this moving forward. You're going to see guys that last year of their careers, guys who are trying to increase their stock a little bit, trying maybe to get a Senior Bowl invite, maybe trying to move up the draft a little bit. You're going to see guys make sure that they put themselves in the most ideal situation. And for Jacquez, I think he just decided that playing for Summerall at Kentucky and having a little bit more guaranteed playing time, if you will, was a better gamble than staying at Ole Miss and potentially losing a lot of that playing time.
From Rebel Grove, it is Neil McCready. You can get him at Twitter, appropriate, Neil McCready. Neil, let's talk about the defense before we flip over, because I cannot get enough of Lane Kiffin. That'll be in just a couple of minutes. Defensively, though, I've heard the phrase, you know, you and I have talked, you read it in print, whatever. Hey, if they can be just a little bit better this year, you don't get better by losing a guy like Jacquez Jones, but I think it is a commentary that, wow, we're a lot better. I may need to go somewhere else to find guaranteed playing time. So tell me what that little bit better on defense is going to be, because there's been a huge influx of talent, especially in the secondary.
Yeah, I think they can be a little bit to a good bit better up front. Now, you know, and I always have to preface this because people drop that, oh, you're being a homer. They were awful a year ago. Like, they couldn't stop anybody. So being a good bit better doesn't mean that I'm saying it's going to be an upper-level SEC defensive line. I'm not saying that. But I do think they're going to be better and potentially a good bit better up front. They have some size. They brought in some athleticism. They have some guys that appear to have kind of taken a little bit of a developmental step, which is what you'd expect from freshmen. At linebacker, we just talked about it. I think they're going to be deeper. I think they're going to be more talented. I think they're going to be more effective. But again, they were awful at linebacker a year ago for the most part. So, you know, being better doesn't necessarily equate to wins. And then, as you referenced in the secondary, I think there's no question that they're going to be a lot better. You know, and they were bad there a year ago. I think they have a chance in the secondary to actually be good. Not great, but good. What does that equate to overall as a unit? Throw in the fact that they're in the same system for the second year in a row. You know, I think it foretells pretty good things. I don't think they're going to give up 700 yards a game like they did at times a year ago. But, you know, can they be good enough to turn around the Auburn game, the LSU game, teams like that? We'll find out. I mean, I think they have a chance to be, because I think they have a chance to be dynamic on offense. But they've got to be significantly better for that to happen, and we'll see. They're going to be better. How much better? I don't know.
Offensively, when it comes to Lane Kiffin and the play calling, I've told people before, people go to YouTube, just type in like Ole Miss offense, you know, Arkansas defense. You can do this for anybody, you know, Missouri defense, Florida offense. Well, you can just watch the cut-ups. And I am more convinced the more I watch some of the offensive cut-ups, Elijah Moore, really, 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 really good ball player, and I think he's going to catch a ton of passes, what, for the New York Jets. I think he's going to be a good NFL player. I don't think it's going to affect Ole Miss's offense that much. The thing, I think what Lane Kiffin does is he can get the ball to anybody, giant guy, tiny guy, doesn't matter, especially running backs and slot guys. He can get the ball to anybody.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm a guy who covered Elijah Moore's entire career. I'm not surprised he's early second round pick. I think he could have been a first round pick, probably should have been a first round pick. And I'm with you. I think the Jets got a steal there. That being said, Elijah Moore didn't play in the last two games of Ole Miss's season. He didn't play at LSU, and he didn't play in the bowl game against Indiana, and their offense was still every bit as effective as it was with him. And that's not a criticism of Elijah. It is a testament to what you just said. He's a brilliant play caller. I think Jeff Lebby is too. That's part of what kind of gets undersold here a little bit, is people talk about Kiffin and only Kiffin. I think Lebby helps that offense quite a bit as well. But look, Kiffin's proven this at Alabama, at FAU. But go back to those Alabama days when, you know, sometimes they were very pass oriented with Amari Cooper, and sometimes they were run oriented when they had big time backs. And, you know, sometimes he had elite quarterbacks, and sometimes he didn't. I mean, you know, they weren't – when he first got to Alabama, I mean, they weren't exactly just, you know, tearing it up at the quarterback position. And he developed some guys, and he absolutely had talent to work with. But the job that he did with Matt Corral a year ago, and you and I have talked about this before, it was remarkable. He took a guy who had lost all of his confidence – who was basically leaving, who had essentially been benched, who was just riding the season out, who could not wait to get out of Oxford, and turned him into the face of the program in a COVID year where you didn't have spring, where you didn't have a traditional offseason. It's really remarkable stuff, Chuck. I mean, it's incredible, really. And then he had a couple of games. He had that game in Fayetteville where he was really bad, and instead of digressing – or regressing, they fixed it, kind of went forward, and then he had a bad half at LSU. He didn't go into the tank. Instead, he came out and had a great second half and had a phenomenal bowl game against Indiana. So I think there's a lot to be said for what Kiffin can do. And as long as he has weapons, and he does, he'll exploit them. He'll utilize them, and that's what he's always done, and there's no reason to think that's not what he'll do this year.
All right, talk about a player that I just think, man, what a good-looking young player, Henry Parrish, running back there. Oh, no, Jerry Neely's the running back. Yeah, he is. Well, it's no Snoop Connor's the running back. I want to ask you, handoffs received, not Matt Corral running the ball and not like rocket sweeps or, you know, motion or whatever. Handoffs received as a running back, what's the chance Henry Parrish has the most of those?
Pretty good. I'm with you. I'm a big fan. I think you look at some of his ability to make that second move. He's got to stay healthy. He's had some injury issues at Ole Miss. Missed the spring with some injury stuff, and missed the first part of his freshman year with some injury stuff. So, you know, he's got to stay healthy. But, He's got a second gear, a third gear. I think that his presence, along with Snoop Connor's presence, and then the emergence of Kentrell Bullock in the spring at giving them some depth at running back, I think it's going to allow them to experiment with Jerrion Ealy in the slot, in space. Ealy is athletically very similar to Elijah Moore. He's not the receiver that Elijah is any more than Elijah's the running back that Ealy is, but they're very similar skill sets. And I won't be surprised if Ole Miss – I'm always careful how I do this, Chuck, because people think you're making a comparison to a player. I'm not saying that Jerrion Ealy is Reggie Bush. I'm not saying that, not at all. But if you told me that when you look at the film at the end of the season and you see that Ole Miss used Ealy in similar ways to the way that USC used Bush when Kiffin was over there, I wouldn't be at all surprised.
If I check my Twitter right now, somebody has already tweeted, Neil McCready just said, so I promise you it's already out there, that Jerrion Ealy is Reggie Bush.
I'm sure it is. I just always feel like I have to make that caveat that I'm not comparing the two players. I'm not saying he's going to win
role.
The Heisman Trophy.
It's a role, people. That's all. Yeah. Last thing I want to ask you about Rebel Road Trip, and I was talking about this a couple of weeks back. I was watching one of the videos of and the meetings are always the same. It's tremendous because you get up close and you get to ask a question maybe and have some fried chicken next to your head coach. And Lane, I said about Lane and Mike Leach, worst thing for college football fans in Mississippi last year is you didn't get that up-close experience with two guys that, I mean, my gosh, get to that coaches meeting in spring, you know. How is the Rebel Road Trip going for Ole Miss fans and Lane Kiffin?
Yeah, I don't know, Chuck. I went to the thing last night just for a few minutes before. I didn't stay for the program or whatever. I can't imagine that that's Lane's favorite thing to do. It's in the contract and it's part of what he has to do. But
that's one of the things he does well, though.
He does. I mean, you know, look, Lane has a Twitter persona, I think, and then there's a real life persona that's a little bit different. I mean, he's a genius with social media. But in real life, he's a little more laid back than that, a little more reserved than that, a little more quiet than that. So, you're not going to get a whole lot out of him. I mean, he will answer questions about the playoff and things like that. But he's I don't think in those settings he's exactly going to open up and bare his soul in front of people or anywhere else for that matter.
Yeah, I had mentioned, I don't know if I said this to you before, but I interviewed him when he was at Tennessee, and that's when he showed up and immediately, was to bluster everywhere. And I sat down to interview him, and after I turned the camera off, I apparently had a look on my face, and he's like, kind of boring, wasn't it? I was like, we just talked football, and I have told people about that persona, but coming off the two different seasons that Mississippi State fans experienced last year, especially the way it started, and Ole Miss fans, getting out there on those coaches' road trips, it's always a good experience, especially when you have a new coach and you missed it last year. Neil, I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate you.
All right, Neil McCready again, RebelGrove.com. Sam Pittman, same sort of thing. That get out there and in front of, and you got to do it in, it's in groups of 150 or 600 or whatever. We mentioned this in the contract. That was one thing Nick Saban, I'm trying to remember what the number was, that maybe it was 4 or 6 or whatever. And he said, I'll do them. And you tell me where. But whether it's 10 people or 2,000, I'll do, and I'm going to pick the, I think it's 4. And so, I've talked about some of these meetings before, and it could be 100, it could be 250 people, whatever. It's usually like, the Bessemer Tide Pride Club or the, Jacksonville, Gator Club, whoever, just the local installment of that. And so you'll have a couple of hundred people there, and it's a big deal. And so that's why they pick 5 or 6 different locales. But again, new coach, SEC, not able to do that. It's just as for a lot of fans, it's that one time where they actually do get some sort of access, because whether you're in a different part of the state and don't go to home games, or maybe it's just a cost thing and you can go to one of these events for like $35-40, but going to a game is maybe a little different. It's just one of those things, one of those traditions in the South that it's always meant a lot to a lot of people. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll wrap up on a Friday, wrap up for the week next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
What a fun show today. Neil McCready, Rebel Grove, talking Ole Miss and their progression into the first real offseason with Lane Kiffin. I don't know how much of a fact, I will never know, when it's impossible to quantify, and if you spent every waking hour the rest of your life trying to discover how the pandemic affected one athletic department, you would never have a definitive answer. You would have some indicators and such, but I don't know. You know, maybe you won three games if there were 12 being played and there were non-conference games anyway. Maybe you won three games because it was just an all SEC slate. I don't know why you went 3-7. Did Arkansas go 3-7, for instance? I don't know why. Look how much better they are. Well, okay, maybe. Who did they play and what were they going? That's what I'm saying. The 3-7? Maybe Arkansas is every bit as bad as they were when Chad Morris was the head coach. And they just happened to catch some teams having their, hey, we got 52, but don't tell anybody. I have no idea. And so that's for teams that had a rough season. And so I can say, I don't know if you were that bad or I don't. See, that's where I don't know if you're that bad and the good teams. I don't know if you're that good. Folks, it's different. I don't know if you were that bad, 3-7, or I don't know if you were even worse than 3-7. It could have been that all things equal, no deadly critters floating through the air, that maybe instead of 3 out of 10, it is 3 out of 12, or 2 out of 12, or 1 out of 12, or maybe you go 0-for. That happens. So that's on the one end of it. And so most people, I'll give you both ends of it, the good team and the bad team. There's two ends for the bad team. The reason they got the two wins or the three wins could have been pandemic. Now, on the other side, teams that achieved, there's too much to context away at that point. If you did work your way to 7, 8, 9, 13 wins, There's not enough opponents that were going through a rough week for you to do that. At that point, if you succeeded, that's way more on you. And so, like there was so much going on that, I mean, you had so many opponents that would show up for the same game and like, you gonna play? We will if y'all will. That Virginia Tech Miami game comes to mind. Yeah, I guess we'll play today. Justin Fuente, I'll give him credit. He never said it before a game or really after a loss. But there was one game, and I can't remember when it was, where he unloaded. After a win, he unloaded with their COVID facts. And the immediate thing I thought was, well, I'm going to see their schedule. When did they lose, and what did he say after those? Because it wasn't the same. He waited until the kids had won a game, and then he said, I want to tell y'all what everybody's going through. And so when you were able to succeed, I don't care what the other team was doing. If you were able to succeed, that means you did enough right. You figured it out somehow, even recruiting. I've talked about how Kirby Smart, he goes to Georgia. It's tougher to take really good and make it great or borderline great and take it to best than it is to take over 6-6 and get us to the Outback Bowl. Kirby showed up and took really good with recruiting and immediately turned it into, like, literally best. Was it a second or his third class was the number one? No, 2018 best class in America, ranked that way at least. So he figured out recruiting, and then he couldn't recruit. And you know what, Kirby? Where did Georgia finish this year, Dan? Do you remember? Top five, I know. Top three?
Believe so. I think they were number three.
Okay, great. They were top three. Kirby showed up in Athens like, I got it all figured out. Oh, do you, says Tennessee and Florida and Auburn. And then they're like, oh, he does have it figured out. And then the cosmos and Mother Nature and planet Earth and everybody said, oh, yeah, new deal, 52-card pickup. And Kirby figured it out again. That when you failed last year, you fell short. Or I'm going to do deep dives and I'm going to try to figure it out. When you succeeded, when you had to rework everything, and then you found a way to either keep succeeding, Kirby, Nick, Dabo, or even have a pop-up season, especially for a first-year coach. Couldn't be more impressed. So looking forward, like I said, with Lane and Mike Leach, but all those other first-year coaches, I want to have a more reliable opinion come this December than I did last. Dan, how are you today?
Oh, great. You know, it's been a great week here on the show. Appreciate everybody listening. Of course, you missed this or any show or any part of the show, you can always go back and listen when you download the Southern Sports Today app and catch both hours of the show. Everything right there on the app, free of charge. Good for you. You know, I was thinking about this while you were talking with Neil McCready in the last segment, and that is, I think it is so simple to figure out why Jaquez Jones leaves a program like Ole Miss and goes and plays at Kentucky. Chuck, I think that you're going to start finding more examples of this because more and more right now in college football, especially, defensive players are being told, yeah, you're on the team, but you really don't matter because we're not going to win because of people like you. And at some places, I feel like that message, if not outwardly being told to them, is subliminally being told to them, where they don't necessarily know that they're being told it, but it's kind of looking around of, hey, everybody's looking at Matt Corral. Hey, everybody's looking at all the offensive players. The hell about me? I'm a defensive player on a Division I football team. I should matter. And he says to himself, you know what? Not only am I a defensive player, I'm on a bad defense here. I got a chance to go to a place where I especially matter. And not only do I especially matter, I especially have an opportunity to be able to go to the next level because of the tutelage from said guy. This is a win for defensive coaches, Chuck, because there are many of them right now who go into the meetings and they're being told, hey, you got no shot when you get out there on Saturdays. But a guy like Mark Stoops, he definitely feels like he feels pretty good about what he does as a coach. He can puff his chest out a little bit more. And guess what? This ain't going to be the last of a guy like Jaquez Jones leaving a program and going to Kentucky.
Yeah, like I said, best ice skater in Egypt. You don't get a lot of run. All right, the pretty girls aren't quite as impressed. Maybe you need to move to, I don't know, Norway, Sweden, somewhere. And Ole Miss wants to be better on defense. They really, really, really do. Kentucky? It's a little bit more about that's what they're about. So agree with you there. Dan, good stuff, man. David, good job, especially yesterday. Juggling chainsaws, good for you. Wraps it up for the week, folks. Give me a couple of days. I will recharge the batteries, and I promise we will all be back together this coming Monday. Two more hours college football conversation right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.